Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Veronica Reeves at the United Nations in New York. In this week's program, everyone must play a role in advancing climate action, and mothers are critical for saving the Hawaiian language from extinction. But first, a virus that could result in devastating birth defects has now spread to at least 18 countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. That's according to a branch of the World Health Organization. The Zika virus is spread by mosquitoes. Its most common symptoms are a mild fever and skin rash, accompanied by joint or muscle pain. It's not thought to be fatal, but health experts are becoming increasingly worried about how the virus could affect unborn babies. I spoke with Dr. Marcos Espinal from the Pan American Health Organization and asked him why determining if someone is sick with Zika is so challenging.
The reporting of the cases is something a little bit tricky because one in four cases of the people affected by the virus doesn't develop signs and symptoms. So, and also the diagnostic for the infection, it has a very small window of opportunity because it's only 5 days. After 5 days, if the person has been infected, it's not possible to diagnose it. So the key issue is that if a country reports confirmatory case of Zika, then we know the population is at risk. And aggressive vector control needs to be done.
We have also seen concerns about newborn children and how they may have been affected if their mom became sick with Zika during pregnancy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
This is why, you know, Zika has become very interesting to the international organization. If there was not potential linkages to newborns and congenital malformations, then probably Zika would have gone without notice. The issue is that there's growing evidence suggesting there is a linkage between Zika virus infection during the first trimester of pregnancy and the giving birth to children with microcephaly, which is heads and brains smaller than the usual for normal children. We cannot say, conclude yet, that this is the cause of the microcephaly, but the evidence is growing. Because to conclude that this is the real issue, we need to take into account other confounding variables or other factors. Like, for instance, microcephaly, it can be produced by other viruses like cytomegalovirus, by toxins, by chemical. But the evidence suggests that there is a potential linkage. And studies are being conducted at this time that will give us more data to make such a conclusion. In the meantime, the recommendation is aggressive vector control, aggressive control of the mosquito to minimize the impact and to ensure that women of reproductive age, pregnant women, avoid the biting of the mosquitoes, use long trousers, use bed nets if they sleep during the day because the mosquitoes attack during the day, not during the night.
Do you expect that the spread will soon be brought under control, or is there concern that this is just the tip of the iceberg?
If the governments of the region step up efforts in controlling, vector control the mosquito, we hope that this is not going to be a repetition outbreak because of several issues. The virus creates immunity, so it comes and goes. And the epidemic peak of the mosquito, of the outbreak, is 3 to 4 or 5 months. If that is the case, and the evidence that is coming suggests so, we'll start to see less outbreaks.
Everyone is responsible for moving the climate change agenda forward following last month's historic agreement in Paris. That's the view of Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, widely accepted to be the author of The Concept of Sustainable Development. More than 190 countries agreed to limit global temperature rises due to emissions to less than 2 degrees Celsius. The first female prime minister of Norway is now the UN Foundation board vice chair. She was awarded the Zaid Future Energy Prize 2016 on Tuesday. Basma Bagal caught up with Dr. Brundtland at the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week.
The concept sustainable development was created by my commission. And then we pushed for this, and we had another recommendation, a global summit on sustainable development 5 years after our report. And that was Rio 92. Then, of course, I became director general of the World Health Organization. In 98.
Do you see the world is ready for renewable energy?
The world is more than ready for renewable energy, and the initiatives taken here are part of that readiness. As I said today here from Abu Dhabi, we can and we should. It's no longer a question of what to do, it is just acting. The basis in global agreements are now there. So nobody can question the activity and say, oh, this is an idea from the rich countries. You know, it doesn't include the poor country. No. All of this has been used as arguments for many years now, stopping the process. Now we have a common agreement, and it means everyone is responsible in supporting those who need support. And that is part of the agreement itself. But we need to move, and there's no more discussion about whether we must or not.
How important is the role of women in that regard?
So women, we focus strongly on women already in our common future nearly 30 years ago, because the role of women in every society has been underestimated. In many places of the world, women are still underestimated. The importance they have for society, for the growth in the economy, for the health of the coming generation, all of this. Now the world has agreed that there should be gender equality and empowerment of women. It's in those agreements. And but it has been a long struggle, I can tell you. Many countries have been putting their feet down and trying to stop something which is logical. The human rights are human rights for women as well as men, and there is no reason for gender differentiation in legal terms, in economic terms, or educational, whatever.
Mothers were crucial to so-called language nests that brought spoken Hawaiian back from the brink of extinction. That's according to activist Amy Kalili, who has been part of the U.S. state of Hawaii's indigenous language movement since the 1990s. Latest government figures show there are more than 18,000 fluent speakers, a significant increase from 10 years earlier. Ms. Kalili has been attending an international expert group meeting at UN headquarters on preserving and revitalizing indigenous languages. Matthew Wells asked her to explain why Hawaiian had nearly died out.
After the overthrow of our government in 1893, 3 years later, there was a ban on using the Hawaiian language as a medium of instruction in the public school system in Hawaii. The public school system prior to that was all in Hawaiian. And immediately, our language almost reached the brink of being lost, such that two generations, two and a half maybe, passed without any native or first language speakers. So at home, there was a very small group of people who had a passion for bringing this language back. A lot of them were involved, whether it was in community language learning and or at the university level. At the core of the movement was the Aha Punana Leo. And punana, meaning nest in Hawaiian, and leo being one of our words for language. These were language nests, if you will, and the goal was to bring very young babies who were just maybe in the early stages of capturing language skill and language learning, if you will, bring them together in an environment with the few native speakers who were left.
So is it fair to say that there was a key role for women and for mothers in particular?
Definitely, and I think that's just an obvious evolution because, again, our focus was getting the language back in the mouths and into the ears of little babies, and so bringing them to these environments, of course, were their parents. And, you know, for the most part, mothers are still the caregivers at home in Hawaii, so they were the ones that were charged with bringing their keiki or their children to this learning environment. And over time, what we have even seen is that became empowering for these mothers. There were fathers, and there still are committed fathers that come and bring their children and interact with the family programming, but a lot of it falls on the shoulders of the moms that have come and engaged in the program. Some of them, even to the point where they've gone back to school, gotten higher degrees of education in order that they can come and help in the movement. The emphasis is on this intergenerational transmission of the language back into the home with babies and with children. Women have had an integral role to play.
And why is it so important to preserve these spoken languages, which are, as you've been hearing at this conference, disappearing at the rate of one every 2 weeks?
There is valuable knowledge that is held in our indigenous ways of being and living and interacting with our environment that are important not only to us as indigenous peoples, but to everybody on the planet.
You have been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We are also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thank you for listening. I'm Veronica Reeves.